Welcome to From Doubt to Drive, Entrepreneurs Only. Join us on an inspired journey through the ups and downs of successful entrepreneurs. Our hosts, Mario C. Bauer and Florian Schneider, will explore how conquering doubt is essential for entrepreneurs to truly unleash drive. By being a part of our community, you too can learn how to propel from doubt to drive. So tune in, buckle up, and enjoy.
Welcome and welcome back. Florian, how are you doing?
I am doing still well. How are you?
Still in the training. Florian is in the training, but we talk about that later. So Florian, we as foodies have also an obligation to be mindful about food waste. So what you do as a consumer, but even more what you do as an entrepreneur.
A tough question, and I'm happy that we have the right guest later to explain it better to us. But what I personally do, I try only to shop and buy what I really need. If I do my food, I really try to avoid waste as much as possible. If I'm traveling and my fridge is still full, I try to give it to neighbors or others. That's basically what I do. That's just be resourceful with the goods we have.
This will make our next guest very happy. And we like to welcome not just a dear friend, but somebody who really makes a difference in that topic, the CEO of Too Good To Go, Mette. And Too Good To Go is more than an app. It's really a mission. And if I read up right, you guys saved 120 million meals last year, which is 3 meals every second, which equals to 300,000 tons of CO2. So welcome, Mette.
Thanks, Mario.
Thank you. Great to have you here. I read behind you, it says, not all heroes wear capes. Some carry paper bags. And that brings me to my first question, because I read on your website in the mission statement, you had a value saying, we build a legacy, which is a pretty bold statement. So Mette, tell us, how do you build a legacy, or how somebody can build a legacy?
Yeah, I think so. So for me, the legacy part is, of course, about having a strong purpose. And we are a social impact company. So Too Good To Go is about reducing food. Our mission is to inspire and empower everyone to fight food waste together. And then when we think about that impact we have, it's across a couple of different levels. So first level of impact is the most direct impact. So that's about helping partners save food. So here we have an app approaching 100 million users now, where 150,000 stores put up food for sale every day that they would otherwise have thrown in the bin. So that's very direct, that impact, and it's now 4 meals a second. That is quite tangible. But then on top of that, we have another level of impact that we call indirect impact, more where we try to influence more food to getting saved. So this could be public affairs work, where we work with legislators to improve legislation around food waste. It can be some of the PR things we do, educational work with schools, a lot of work there. And then we have a third level of impact that's more about, maybe if we can just inspire a few business leaders of tomorrow to start better companies, then I think we've also made an impact. So all of this really serves to building a legacy and kind of building something that will outlast any single one of us.
It's basically an impressive journey you, together with Too Good To Go, did. And we come to that in detail maybe a little bit later. This podcast is about challenges and doubts. So my question, Mette, to you is, what was one of the biggest challenges with Too Good To Go you had over the past years? Do you recall anything like that?
Yes, for sure. And I think any kind of startup, scale-up story is full of ups and downs. You know, oftentimes when you hear about the big success companies, it sounds like it was always a straight line from A to B, and that's very rarely the experience. At least that hasn't been my experience. So I think one of the first kind of, maybe my first crisis in Too Good To Go, or kind of confidence crisis more, was actually before my first day even. So this was basically my just short story here. Too Good To Go was founded and the app was launched in January 2016. Later that year, I heard about the company by coincidence, and I loved the concept.
Tram, right?
I
invested. You just were sitting on a bus, tram, yeah, on a bus, on a, and you heard people
bus,
talking about
bus.
It.
Yeah. The woman next to me showed me the app on her phone, and I just thought it was the coolest idea. I thought that we could improve on the actual implementation, but I loved the concept. So I reached out to the founders, asked if I could help. And at that time, they were looking for a sparring from someone who had app experience, had worked with apps for almost 10 years at that point. And then they were looking for funding. So I invested a few weeks later. And a few months later, they asked if I could take over full-time as CEO. So that was kind of... That was a little bit my backstory, and I jumped into the investment with my heart and a little bit less with my mind, in the sense that I didn't do much due diligence. And when they asked if I could take over, I also just, you know, I had to go for it, and I didn't really think it through. But then between the time where I said yes and my first day, I had some free time. So I started working on the side. And one of the first tasks was to kind of build a financial model and just make sure that, you know, you want to really understand your business deeply. So I started building this model, big model, with all the different drivers in the business. And, you know, nobody had done that work because such an early point in the journey. But basically, the confidence crisis was as I built out that model, it was quite clear that for this to ever be profitable, most of the main KPIs had to improve factor 2 or 3. Like,
wow.
Operationally, the challenge was pretty significant.
What was your feeling then when you figured that out?
That was the confidence crisis. It was like, wow. I mean, I get that there's a lot of stuff we can improve here, but, you know, can we really do it factor 2 or 3 on most of these drivers was the big question mark. And when you don't know the business, I mean, it's hard to evaluate, right? Mm. So I remember I even asked my husband, is it too late to bail out? Because I hadn't had my first day yet. But he's not a very dramatic guy. And he was just like, well, you know, it's already been announced in the newspaper. I think you kind of...
Go for it.
Your only option now is basically to make it work. So suck it up.
So what did you do to gain more confidence back?
Then it was just like, then you just dive in and roll up your sleeves and just, you know, try to understand the business better. And then we made a strategy. One of the challenges when I joined was that we were spread way too thin. We were already in 10 markets within a year of launching. So it was growing and scaling way too fast for a marketplace. What that also typically means is that you're making the same mistakes in 10 countries, whereas, you know, maybe the better approach typically would be to kind of figure out how do you actually run this business, and then you make a playbook, and then you take that playbook and you go into one country after the other, right? But we had a slightly different approach. So we had to shut down 4 markets. And then of the 6 we had left, we only had enough money to really invest in 3 of them. So the other 3 were kind of just put a little bit on the side, and we let them run, but we couldn't invest in them.
But that means like early days after you already put in the money, committed with your name, you had to make quite some tough decision. And first you said you asked your husband and he encouraged you or he pushed you through. But then facing this struggle, and especially, and I want to stay a little bit this in a young company, because now you're much more grown up, and we come to the grown up problems right after. But how did you work through that? Are you somebody who gathers around with a strong team? Are you trying to make up your mind on numbers and then execute is like, what's your typical modus operandi if you face such a struggle? Because obviously that was tough, especially you also had your own money in and your name and your reputation. How did you work through that?
Yeah, I think my approach is I'm fairly analytical, so I want to understand something, and I want to try and you know figure out what is a good plan, and I want to make sure I have a plan, and then I'm really good at sticking to it. It's quite rare that I make a plan and then I deviate from that. It's very rare actually. So same thing with strategy, right? At Too Good To Go, since I joined almost 7 years ago now, we make a 3-year strategy and we stick to it no matter what. And that has actually served us quite well.
That's interesting because we just had like recently another entrepreneur, strong entrepreneur, and he said when there is data and when there is gut, he always goes with gut. But it seems like you are on the other side. You go with data.
No, it's a bit of both. I think, I mean, when those two align that I feel comfortable that we're doing the right thing. I don't go after the data if it feels wrong. But typically they align pretty well.
Mm. We stayed now in this early crisis, but now you said you're seven years in the journey. We had world crisis like COVID in between. You obviously had to go through several funding rounds, scaling up. So a more grown-up crisis, Matt, not an early stage one. share one grown-up crisis with
us. A more grown-up one. I mean, that would the biggest there would probably be COVID. So when COVID hit, we lost 60% of our revenue over 10 days. So it was mad, just massive. You know, every morning refreshing the dashboard, and it just, you know, just as you thought it couldn't go
any lower.
It hurts. Every day, you know, it was like, okay, we're not at the bottom yet. And I think what was hard about that was the uncertainty. You know, it's one thing to lose 60% if you know that, you know, it's going to last 2 months and then you will crawl your way back. It's a very different thing when you don't know where the bottom is. You know, is it 60? Is it 90? I mean, the country that was hit the hardest, that was the UK. There we lost 92% of revenue, which basically means you're almost down to nothing. And it's not like the base was that high to begin with either. So that uncertainty on where is actually the bottom here, but also then, is it going to be a V curve? Is it going to be a checkmark-shaped curve? How long is that comeback?
Or is it even the end?
Yeah, or is the world never coming back as we know it? So I think that was extremely stressful. And also, you know, you have obvious liquidity questions when something like that happens in a scale-up. Because, you know, if this was going to drag on for months and months, we would start, you know, looking at a challenge.
Yeah. But everybody in such a situation always looks at the leader, obviously, although you have strong teams and you run that as a team, but at the end, they all look at you. How did you find the drive? Because in COVID, it was not just that we have been affected in the business, we also have been affected privately because everybody of us had to readjust all their private setup. So how did you find the drive? How did you find the strength to navigate through?
Yeah, and I do think that in those extreme situations, the pressure on the leader is pretty massive, and you have that, you really can feel like everyone's looking at you like you're an oracle, and now, you know, tell us what's gonna happen next, and tell us how we get out of this, right? So it's very nice that there's confidence. But you also have to come up with answers, right? And then in this case, I had a good team. I had some great people around me. We kind of with one especially, we kind of, you know, we would just really make a war room, and we came up with a plan, and then we tried to budget and just predict a little bit what what that reopening or coming back to normal was going to look like. Then we raised the funding we needed to bridge until we came back to previous levels. And then I think part skill, part luck, the plan actually held up almost precisely when it came to predicting how the months were going to come in. So that made it easier. And then, you know, as the weeks went by and we could share with the team, you know, here's what we predicted. Here's what's actually happening. We're on track. Just take it easy. It's calm down. Carry on. Yeah. And then I spent a lot of energy on communication during that period. So put out video updates just with the short messages to everyone several times a week. Because also remember at that time there was a lot of like emotional anxiety, and we had, I mean, our team in, we have in Italy, our main office is in Milan. So, you know, they got hit first in February, right. Whereas the rest of our countries got hit in March 2020. Mm-hmm. But just like the whole mental health thing was a real theme during those months.
Are you an entrepreneur experiencing growth pains? Your business is expanding rapidly, but you're grappling with obstacles such as people, structure, or funding. Perhaps it's time to challenge your current approach, seek other perspectives, and to discover new tactics to overcome these hurdles. Come and join our seminar, Navigate Uncertainty with Confidence, your retreat, reset, restart, Sri Lanka, from the 7th to the 14th of September. For more information, please visit www.fromdoubttodrive.com. And now, back to the show.
They always say, like, every crisis is an opportunity. Sometimes it's very difficult to see that in the crisis, but now looking back, as COVID has also passed us a couple of years now already, what was the opportunity took during that crisis? What made you stronger? What did you adjust? What at the end became an opportunity? Was there anything good out of that?
Yeah, I think there was some good. I think there were some good things. One thing was just culturally, it was the first time we really got pressure tested. You know, we hadn't been under stress to, I mean, when you're in a scale up, you're under a daily stress because you want to grow 100% a year, and that takes quite a bit. But that's kind of, that's all positive in a way, which is different than this kind of more negative stress. So I think the team and the culture came out stronger. We also took some decisions during that period. When we made the plan, we really looked at our values. You mentioned build a legacy as one of our five values. Another one is we care. And we made the conscious decision not to let anybody go because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Which I think most people wouldn't have decided to do.
No.
Because we had to raise the money to then fund that decision. But I could see, like, retrospectively, that really mattered a lot to the team, and I think that that made them really, you know, respect that, you know, when we say we're mission driven, we're true to our values. They saw it, they showed it.
And it paid off, because now you are in 17 countries. Building a unicorn, basically, and 1,200 people working for you—that is something where it paid off to have those values and don't let people go. Obviously, in this time after COVID, when you actually accelerated again, you remember a challenge within that period of, let's call it, full speed, that you suddenly came from a very slow speed out of COVID, and suddenly it boosts off.
From we kind of hit the bottom till we were back to pre-COVID levels in terms of our activity and revenue and meals saved, it took 5 months. So I think those 5 months were a little bit all hands on deck. Yeah. And we spent significant time, you know, when we didn't have much else to do, that all countries were kind of instructed, you work on your comeback plan now, and you better make sure it's tight and solid. And then we go execute as soon as the restrictions would allow for that. But I think it was actually, that period was not, I mean, it was challenging that then sometimes you would have new restrictions come, right? I mean, they would lift in 1 week and then 3 weeks later, they would come back again in a country. So we got pretty agile and good at just adopting. And we also saw that we actually really put an effort into making the company more virus resistant, in the sense that there were pockets of growth, and to your earlier question, there were a few other opportunities that we still had, so we really doubled down on those. And that also meant that when the second wave and the third and in some countries fourth wave hit, we only took a 5% hit and not a 60% hit. And one of those was just we found that whereas all our normal partners, so the restaurants and the bakeries and the coffee shops were shut down, the producers were still very much alive and producing food. And they just lost a lot of their customers because suddenly the restaurants wouldn't, you know, weren't buying anything. So they suddenly had tons of surplus food that we could then sell directly to consumers. So we found those, and that was a segment that went up 800% over a short period. So we found those pockets of growth where there was something to do, and we have since actually worked on that model and launched it as a new business line. We call it Too Good To Go Parcels. So now we have surprise bags, and then we have the parcels where you can buy food from the likes of Unilever, that would otherwise have gone to waste, and you can get that delivered to you. But, you know, I don't know that we would have spent that much time experimenting with that if it hadn't been COVID.
So that was the opportunity out of this crisis.
You would say so.
I want to go to a topic you mentioned before, very humble, that I had app experience. I think we need to dig deeper into that, because you didn't just have app experience. You build a very successful startup. And I want to go to this topic because we know from a listener base that there is a lot of startup entrepreneurs or people who consider doing startup. And you build an app, as you said, Endomondo, which you sold quite successful. That's why I said you were quite humble for, according to the notes here, 80 million to Under Armour. But I'm not so much interested about the exit. I'm more interested about the start. And you had a job at McKinsey. And in one of the interviews you said, or I heard, you said, I took this opportunity, or I realized my dream, because I didn't want to be in the situation where you say, what if? You wanted to feel it and go in there. And I want to use that topic. There is a word in German which is called Schwellenangst. And Schwellenangst is there's no direct translation into English, but it's the fear of threshold and border. So you know, or you want to go somewhere, but that's uncharted territory. And you don't know what to expect, because you have a very comfortable job at McKinsey. You have a fancy business card. Everybody admires you that you have the job. And suddenly you say, let's do a startup where I risk everything. And I want to talk about this moment of Schwellenangst, how you overcame that. What was your thoughts and feeling back then? How you look back onto that?
Yeah. Well, I think whenever I take a risk, I really try to get clear on what's the worst thing that can happen? The very worst thing. And I just think it's very good to be clear on that, because a lot of the time that Schwellenangst or anxiety is actually way higher than what it has to be, right, if you really analyze it. So in the case where you have like a solid, stable job, for a political scientist, a good income, it was, it was like, okay, worst case, I go out, I join these guys here, we start a company, it won't work. I will have spent X months with zero salary. That was kind of the financial worst case scenario. I think maybe the bigger risk was probably more like your own pride and your name and
base value.
Yeah, now you're someone who tried and failed. I think that's probably worse than, you know, losing the 3 or 6 or 12 months of salary, at least for me. But then, you know, when you get clear on what are those things, and then you have like, you know, even if that happens, then what? And then it's like, then I can always come back and I can take the exact same job and I can have the exact same business card. And then I at least know I pursued my dream. So then that makes it easier, right? Whereas I think if you're thinking about starting a business, if there are some people, which was the case for me, that you actually want to do it with, that are asking and inviting and ready, then that chance may not come again. But a corporate job, you can always get.
It would be interesting. I brainstormed once, but I don't know how to do that. I would love to make interviews with all of these Mattes and Marios and Hugos out there who didn't jump and got stuck in what they do, but we never hear from them. So it would be interesting because the other question is like, as you said, what if? And I think it's always this lost opportunity than actually the risk, because you said it, you rationalized it. At the end of the day, if you put it on a piece of paper, it's all in our head, but it's such a strong fear, die Schwellenangst, and so many are not able to do that. And this is a podcast from entrepreneurs to entrepreneurs. And it's also a podcast for people who are actually thinking about doing that. Now I want to jump from the very early beginning to the now. What keeps you up at night now regarding your company and regarding the world? What is on your mind right now?
Oh, I mean, in the world is a pretty big, that's a pretty big question, I think.
Yes. In your thinking, not everything is important for each of us, but what are the things, what keeps you up, what worries you?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I think like very macro level worldwide, I think there are a few pretty big challenges. So one, of course, is peace and war. Another one is climate and biodiversity is going to come more and more. I think people still think about climate as the big thing, but there's another crisis right in the tail of that. So those are really, really big ones. I think I feel super privileged that I get to work on something that addresses parts of these, at least. For Too Good To Go, the bigger question for me is, how do we continue to grow rapidly and have, you know, significantly more impact year on year, not just over the next 2 or 3 years, but over the next 10 years? That's maybe what would keep me up at night.
Like what to even do more. Yeah. But when you said about this crisis, obviously, but you tackle it and you do something, does it sometimes, because you meet a lot of business people around the world and other entrepreneurs and or skilled people or people with a lot of money, does it frustrate you that not, I don't want to say everybody, but that not more people go on to a mission like you guys? Does that sometimes frustrate you that there is a lot of unleveraged potential and of entrepreneurs out there who just follow a capitalist mission without the mission behind what you're doing?
Well, yeah, I don't know if frustrate is the right word for it. I don't want to judge, and everyone has different situations and motivations. I think what I would love to help make sure is that people at least, you know, consider what can I do with my professional life, and especially if you want to start a company, you know, I really hope Too Good To Go can be a case example for a company that has succeeded with making the social impact and the financial success go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that can maybe inspire a few people. I mean, we're fortunate that we're actually starting to be a bit of a textbook example in many business schools now, which I think is fantastic. So I try to think about it positively, that we have a role to play here. Yeah.
I can imagine that basically a lot of young entrepreneurs or startups, they want to combine what you achieve. They want to be economically successful, and at the same time, they want to make a good business or leave a good footprint behind them, and being conscious about what they are doing, producing, selling, etc. I can imagine this is quite a stretch for many people. Do you have, if some new entrepreneur, young entrepreneur reaches out to you and they look, Mette, I would like to do this and that, but I need to be successful. How can I achieve that? What would you say to him or to her?
So I think my point of view is just that we have enough, ad networks and photo filters and bad video games. So I don't think the world needs more of that. So when I talk to entrepreneurs, I try to challenge them on, build something real. But I also have to be honest and full disclosure. When people reach out to me with those ideas, I don't engage. But when for example, if a female entrepreneur reaches out with a climate idea, I'll probably set up time and give a little bit of advice if she's interested. But so I have to prioritize my time. But I think it's important that we get engaged in the new solutions.
That's interesting. I like the comment on the video games and filters. I couldn't agree more. We also try always at the end to extract the learnings of or advice of people in crisis. And sometimes it's easier to see ourselves as mentors or coach, or when you have friends who have a company and they seek for advice, or in whatever form. If you are in a situation where you have to coach, or you coach others who struggle and who's stuck. So like the first aid kit, so to say, of Mette as a mentor, if I call you completely down on the bottom and say like, I have to give up, I hit the wall, what's the first kind of tool set you would apply to bring me back on track?
What I always kind of come down to also myself when things are really hard is the passion still there? I mean, do you really believe this is important? And for me, again, this quickly becomes an impact thing. Does the world need what you're doing? And do you still believe in it? It's just that if you lose the faith yourself, I don't know that I can talk you into believing in that again. I mean, there needs to be, like, deep down, you need to kind of fundamentally still feel it. Then you can have a confidence crisis, that's fine, but there still needs to be a certain element of conviction. And then if you have that, I mean, usually when people are really in a crisis, then it's not about does this idea work or not? It's usually more that they're about to burn out and they've just been giving too much for too long and not taking care of themselves. So then we can more start talking about, what the situation is, what's the priorities, how do they take care of themselves? How do you make sure you live a full life and you're not just all about work? How do you get a little bit of perspective in? I mean, most startups are not life or death, even if it may feel that way. It's actually not. So just making sure you get that perspective, I think, is, at least I've found that to be quite helpful.
Mm-hmm. Perspective helps. Always, my wife always told me when I had a crisis, she always said, you're not a heart surgeon, you're just selling ketchup. I think sometimes it's good to have a perspective.
Get over yourself, my friend. You're not saving the world.
Yeah, here. You're not saving the world. At least you do.
You do.
Florian, you just had, you wanted to say something?
No, I'm actually, I think we are almost at the end. I
have
really...
one more, Florian, okay. before sure. You wrap up. I have one, like, now on I would like to travel back. If there is this let's say this, whatever, pick an age, 20-year-old Mette or 18 or 19, doesn't matter, like younger Mette, let's put it that way, looking to the current version of yourself, how would the young Mette analyze the current Mette? How would she see her?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think I would be quite happy to see that the version 4.2 is not as hard on herself as version 2.0. So I think there's a different kind of, what I like about age is just that you get to just be more comfortable in your own skin and more confident about your ability to move some stuff and get some things done and then there's the whole professional thing is one thing, but then there's also like there's also a person regardless of what happens in the business. There's like a sure. There's a normal person, right?
Yeah, I think the young one would look at this poster behind you and would think that you're a hero. I think so. Thank you so much for the time. I think now we're definitely at the end. That was really good, a really different perspective. I liked it, and I think it will help a lot to our audience and followers. So thank you, Mette, for taking the time. Greetings to Copenhagen. Keep on saving the world. We cheer from the sideline and try to spread the word with that podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mette. Thank you, Mette.
Save some food. Thanks a lot.
What a hero. A hero with or without a cape, but impressive.
Very impressive. If you want to see a human being with a real purpose in life, it's obviously her. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Great interview. So what's your notes, Florian? What did we learn?
We learned a lot. I mean, first of all, in a confidence crisis, dive in and roll up your sleeves.
Hands on.
Do something, all hands on deck. Very impressive when she talked about COVID and how they actually managed to navigate and pilot through that. Very good.
And also in the COVID, I think the other thing what you said, like show your face, increase communication. People want to hear from the leader. Although the pressure is very high on the leader, she also talked, I think it was first time here on the podcast, about the mental health implication COVID, mm-hmm. which all of us and all of our people had. It was obviously a very extreme situation, but like it comes in smaller doses anywhere more often. So show your face in crisis, increase communication.
Also interesting her opinion on gut and numbers when it comes to that. That she always said, you gut and numbers needs to be aligned. Try to figure out what is a good plan and then stick to it.
That was impressive.
Yeah, very. And she is obviously a very analytic mind when it comes to that. And as she said, she sticked to a 3-year plan and never diverted of it.
I think that's even impressive if you talk about a big company, but about like such a heavy growth company to make a 3-year plan and stick with it, that's impressive. Then on my favorite topic about the Schwellenangst, she said that the Schwellenangst, the fear of threshold borders, is always bigger in your head than it is in reality, and it helps to rationalize it. And I think that was very interesting what she said about when she quit McKinsey and did her first project. The app she was involved, as she said, very humble, to say, like, hey, what's the worst thing that can really happen to me? And I think once you start really rationalizing it, then it's easier to take the step. Mm-hmm.
And a good question to ask is also, if you are in doubt, is the passion still there? Because you can be in doubt of what you are doing, but if the fire inside you is not burning anymore and the passion is not there, or as she said, does the world need what you are doing, and do you still have faith in what you are doing? The answer yes and no can be very important.
Yeah, I think that was one of the strongest advice we had so far as a coaching moment when an entrepreneur comes in struggle and roadblocks to say, are you still passionate?
Yeah.
Is the product you're doing relevant? And do you have faith in you and the product or the team. I think that was a very, very good one.
Yeah.
I also like when you said, like, when somebody's coming with an idea, does the world really need another app, another filter, another video game?
Yeah.
Or does it need more products, mission-driven products or mission-driven services like Too Good To Go or others,
yeah,
which pay into a bigger cause?
Absolutely. There's nothing more to add.
There's nothing more to add.
The world don't need more video games.
No, the world don't need more video games, but it needs more passionate leader like Mette and more companies, purpose-driven companies with Too Good To Go. So that was fun. So Florian, what's up now? What are you doing now? What's next in your day? Back to the training. So we will reveal later this year. Florian is in training. Let's figure out what he's doing.
Greetings
to Amsterdam, to my hometown, actually.
It's all good here. The sun is shining. Take care. Bye-bye.
The sun is shining. Bye-bye.
Wow. We hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we did. But sharing is not just caring. It is also empowering. So recommend this podcast to fellow entrepreneurs who might need a dose of inspiration. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you'll never miss out on future episodes. Thank you for being part of the community from Doubt to Drive Entrepreneurs Only. Mario and Florian are already gearing up for the next episode. Until then, stay tuned, stay driven, and we'll be back next week.